This week on Barbell Shrugged, we interview a man who's been training for 61 years, Dr. Fred Bishi.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bledsoe with Doug Larson, Chris Moore, and CTP behind the camera. We are in beautiful Vermont, hanging out on Judd DeSena's place. I don't even know what we're doing up here anymore.
We're just having a good time, man.
We're hanging out here with Dr. Fred Bishi.
That's it.
Yeah, I got the name right. I'm pretty excited about that. we were hanging around, and Joe said we need to hang out with you a little bit, and we started learning a little bit about your history. And we're like, this guy
He didn't say it like that.
Amazing.
He said, you have to meet this man. Yeah. That's what he said.
What I said?
He said, you have to. He said, yeah, come on up. Maybe you'll interview. No, he said, do it. Just trust me. Do it.
Well, I think he was talking to Doug, so I don't know exactly what happened. I'm just making up stories at this point.
So we got to talk to him.
Yeah.
You've been in the game for a long time. You have quite a history. On your note, you said he has quite a history. Like, you have more history than anyone I know in the strength conditioning world.
Well, I've been at this. I started working out with the weights when I was about 14 years old. And I'll be 85 years old in 10 days. So
we were feeling like we had been in the game for a while.
I'm like, yeah, I've been training for like 17 years. You're like, it's been like 60 something years.
I've got like 22. How long have you been in the game, Doug?
16.
Yeah. So we feel.
Well, 17. I'm a little different. You know, I'm a little different. What happened? I was really, I was really excited about working out with the weights, and I trained very, very hard. I was explaining to him, I devised a way of training I called the overload system. And for the days that I lifted weights, it made me very, very strong. So I used a special power rack that I built, and I actually trained in an old barn. We dug a hole in the floor, so I used to stand in the hole and do deadlifts out of the hole. And we used to do partial deadlifts with 600 to 700 pounds. And when I was 17 years old, I was 200 pounds already, so training very, very hard. Then we had a power rack. We'd hold things over our head, you know, just take it that much out of the power rack, much more than you could jerk. Everything I did was to build tendons, not only muscle strength, but tendon strength. And I used to train to exhaustion. Then I would not train again for another 5 or 6 days, because that's how long it actually took.
Do you mind if we go back and get notepads and shit so we can write down? Because these are great old.
Well, this is what's amazing is what you're describing right now is people use these methods.
Like, they're called cutting edge.
But they'll say this is new. There's a new thing.
No,
like,
no.
It's like because they're using. You know, we now have racks that are built to where you can do exactly what you're describing. What's interesting is like someone goes, I don't have the proper equipment. It's like, have you tried digging a hole yet?
Well, that's what Paul.
Well, you want to really laugh. Some of the weights we used to use, they used to come from the old railroad crossings. They would count the weight. Some of them were this thick, and they weighed like 250 pounds, so to bring up the railroad crossing. So we used to actually take them when we were kids. So we had the most primitive setup in that barn that you ever saw. But we used to train. There was a group of us. We used to train like crazy. And we had a weightlifting club called the Dongan Hills Barbell Club, and we always competed at a higher level. I mean, we were poor immigrant kids. We used to come into a meet, and we used to look like a bunch of ragamuffins, but we always... I'm telling you, we always placed, you know? We always did.
Did you ever happen to train with Paul Anderson? Because he used that same hole-in-the-ground technique for squats and good
morning. Paul Anderson?
Yeah.
I knew Paul Anderson when he was the heavyweight champion of the world.
Good Lord.
He worked with...
That's an honor.
York Barbell Club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Paul was really a great guy, and
those that don't know, Paul Anderson's generally regarded, I guess, as the strongest man in modern history.
He did a squat. He could squat with over 1,000 pounds. I don't know exactly how
he
much.
Did like every day for a long time, for show.
He
was enormous.
Is this the 50s, sir? When was Paul at his peak? I can't remember the exact day.
Let me think a minute. Yeah, I think it was more in the 60s. It was after the Korean War.
He was rumored to have squatted at close to like 1,100. I mean, the conditions are, it's hard to say, you know, depth and all this stuff, but he could put it on his back. He could do amazing feats of strength. The back lift was my favorite one he used to do. He lifted up like a whole audience on his back.
First of all, his legs were so big, he couldn't go down below parallel. It was impossible. So he could just barely squat down to parallel. He could do a push press with over 500 pounds, maybe like 500. I don't remember the exact numbers, but he used to just a slight dip, and he used to push it over his head.
Yeah, this is the days when Olympic weightlifters were some of the best. They were the best pressers in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Yeah, and the only thing about Paul is that he used to use Knox gelatin as a protein supplement, and that's not a really a good thing to do.
Wait, what is that stuff?
Knox gelatin. You make it. They make when you go to the.
Oh, like you make Jello out of it.
Make Jello out of it. And I think that
he was funny. My wife
what was in it?
It was gelatin.
It was made from the bones of like diseased animals and all kinds of stuff. It really wasn't a good idea.
Like it's collagen, basically.
Collagen based, and a box cost maybe like in those days, 15 cents, I guess. You know, so he ended up a sick guy.
What's that in today's dollars?
He ended up getting sick from it. Is that what you said?
Huh?
He ended up getting sick. Is that what you said?
Yeah, he ended up with very bad diabetes, and he. He didn't look to be a ripe old age.
Is that from the gelatin or just because he was an enormous guy?
I think the gelatin had something to do with him getting sick. And then, of course, he was, I forget what he weighed, about 340 pounds. He developed diabetes, you know.
And it wasn't like they were watching their, other levels of vitamin D or omega fatty acids at this point. They're just eating whatever they can find. And then
in those days, what people did was, I mean, there was nothing to sit down and eat a couple dozen eggs and eat, 10 hamburgers and a bunch of french fries and drink everything, go out and drink a quart of beer. And they ate everything just to pack on the muscle, And they were
been there.
There were some strong guys.
They drank beer for recovery?
Yeah, they did. A lot of
guys. We've experimented with this method, Doctor, and it can be quite beneficial sometimes.
Yeah,
when you're in your 20s, maybe.
I know what you're saying.
So legend has it, speaking of digging holes in the ground,
Listen, what we got to remember here.
Never mind.
What's optimal for strength and size, right, is not optimal for longevity. What's optimal for health, it might not be the most conducive thing to be a big, big guy, a strong guy. But you can be strong and, eat a very, very good diet. And you can be well built, too. So I think the answer is really for young guys today that want to have, massive builds, is the middle of the road is to try to give up the if you can give up the processed food, whatever you eat, most likely you're going to be a very healthy person. Because what's killing people today is the processed food. Processed food is absolutely a modern-day curse because I see it in what I do. I've been a clinical nutritionist now for 50 years, and I'm a PhD in nutritional science, and I see a lot of people today are getting cancer and getting really, really
You've observed loose. The rise of this firsthand. You've seen every stage.
I saw when they started using growth hormones like Dianabol. I saw guys, they were eating out like candy, and they got so big so fast, and then they started bleeding from their nose and their rectum, and they will have no.
You've taken too much D-ball when you bleed from your rectum.
That's steroids for anyone that doesn't know that Dianabol is a steroid.
Yeah, it was a steroid.
Yeah.
And there was like,
If you start bleeding from the anus during a squat session, you have overdone the drugs.
And they were eating massive amounts of cheap quality protein, real lousy stuff,
Powder proteins that were just.
No,
quality?
They were, all kinds of. Ribs and not that there's anything they're bad, but a lot of these guys just ate the food was so processed. If you ate like grass-fed beef and organically grown chickens, you ate the amount of protein that they ate, you probably would be okay. It wouldn't be a problem. And then they didn't eat enough vegetables. They weren't getting enough minerals. They weren't getting enough of a lot of nutrients that people are well aware of today what you need to be a healthy person.
They were just worried about the protein.
They're just worried about being strong. Well, to be perfectly honest, what they were worried about is being massive, having 19-inch arms, being able to, squat with 500 pounds. And, of course, when you're eating that type of diet, you had the libido of a Mongolian warrior, so that's what they were really focusing on.
CTP, bookmark this part of the interview. We're going to put that
Mongolian
on a shirt or something.
That's what they were really after. And, that happens. Listen, when you're a young guy, you're 21 years old, and you're all souped up, and you're walking down the street like a praying lion, it comes from that type of a diet, too. We got to be honest here.
We're all sitting here like, we have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
No idea.
Never been
like,
there.
No. I don't think I had as good of a game as you. I don't think I ever felt like a praying lion picking up the chicks. I wasn't trying hard enough, man.
Oh, I was trying hard enough. Striking out a lot.
trying and failing.
You know what I think is important today for guys that are lifting weights? What I have found over the years, what I've been doing, I think a lot of people are missing the boat or they don't fully understand detox. I think everybody should be detoxing periodically because our environment, we're swimming through a pool, a very toxic environment. What's even some of the chemicals on our grass or in our carpets when you buy a new car, you know, in your house, what's in the air, there's all kinds of problems going on. And I think a lot of people don't realize what happens, even if you're eating a healthy diet, that you should be detoxing maybe 2 or 3 times a year. If you could do like a 7-day juice fast and cleanse your bowels, because I believe that I see a lot of people that have cancer, and I believe that our cancer is beginning in our GI tract, you know, upper and lower GI tract, especially your upper GI tract, which a lot of people don't focus on, and your lymphatic system. Your lymphatic system is like the septic tank outside your house. That's why a lot of people have problems with their lymph nodes and they have cancer, they have swollen lymph nodes, because their lymph system is just being overwhelmed. And your lymph system doesn't have a pump like a heart that circulates your blood. I'm sure you guys, the way you work out, that your lymph system is constantly...
Pristine, doctor. Huh? Pristine?
It should be. Right?
If you're eating healthy all the time, do you still think that's something you need to do? If you're eating like really
clean
most time?
Absolutely. I do it. And I eat what I think is a really, very healthy diet. You know, I'm pretty sure it is. But
you eat a lot of raw foods, is that correct, these days?
I do, right. Mm-hmm. But what's in the problem is that what you're not consuming yourself, you know, what you're breathing, what you're exposed to.
It's not just what you're eating, and there's environmental
toxins. But heavy metals. I bet that everybody got tested here would probably find some heavy metals in your system. It's almost impossible.
Mostly gold for me.
Michael's
been drinking. This guy's made of gold.
Michael, this guy got a bottle. He's got a bottle of gold liquid that an alchemist gave him.
He
puts it on our tongues. I'm not going to tell you what this is. Try this. And your mouth fills up with a very bizarre metal flavor. And he goes, he said he dosed me with something else. I got excited. But he said, I got this from an alchemist. It'll make your body work better. And we were, Doug and I were very confused by his statement.
Well, there's a lot of alchemists, you know.
By the way, it was kind of joking.
I know, but you looked very serious.
A lot of people are serious. A lot of alchemists are serious about that.
No. I mean, I there might be something to it. That's the thing. I'm like, all right, well, I'll try it. You know what I mean? I couldn't find any research on it at all. So I'm like, I'll try it.
That's a silly modern thing. I'd be curious to see some of the things you are now seeing in the modern strength community and modern fitness community that you find to be a little bit ridiculous based on your extensive experience. Like, what are we doing now that you've seen us make these mistakes before? Any modern trends, any kind of equipment that you're looking at, you say, man, they should just go back to the barn, you know?
Well, I'm not the most knowledgeable guy about the new equipment that's out there, you know, because I haven't been in the gym in a long time. And probably, I'd say a long time, maybe about 10 years. But I was training up into my 70s, and I don't remember when, I don't remember exact specific dates, but when I was in my 70s, I was still able to do 3 sets of 10 in the squats, you know, down to power low with 300 pounds. So you can be thin. I'm very thin. I'm well aware of that. But you can be thin and be very strong.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And based on the type of diet I follow, it keeps you very, very thin, keeps your arteries clean. Mm-hmm. But I'm also into Qigong, the martial arts, you know, and the breathing. I think everybody should be doing some type of exercise, no matter what you do, like Qigong, because of the breathing help. It's the most revitalizing form of...
That's the name of the breathing exercise, or that's the name of the martial art?
Qigong is a form of martial arts. What I do is the exercise. It's the breathing. It's similar to Tai Chi, where it's very slow movement, and where you're breathing. And Rory's been doing it for 16 years. Mm-hmm. It's a very strong guy. You'd be surprised how strong he is.
Breathing plays a huge factor, and being able to, if you're doing something, even like say a CrossFit workout or something like that, guys that are
breathing
in between sets and stuff like that, that's all your recovery right there. I want to ask you, first off, what were your thoughts on Alchemist? Because you started saying something about Alchemist.
No, I think, I'm not a dogmatic guy. I'm very open-minded. I've seen some alchemists do some pretty amazing things. I'm not a specialist in that type of thing.
But my exposure to alchemists is like zero. Like, my buddy was like, check this out, guys, from the Alchemist. I'm like, I'm going to screw with my friends.
I would say.
And I'm going to try it out myself.
I'm not taking that. That's what I would have told
him. Well, I'll tell you something. There's a much better way to approach it that's scientifically proven, you know. So I don't put anybody down, you know. And I'm not, right. not a dogmatic guy. At this point in my life, I told you I'm 85. I'm still learning every single day. So the key is... nobody knows everything, and actually, to be honest with you, the older I get, the more I've learned, the more I realize I don't know very much, because there's so much knowledge in the world, and I try to learn from everybody. I know I'm learning just by speaking to you guys, because I could see that you're very good at what you do, and this is an opportunity for me to learn something, and maybe we could, hopefully I'm going to be able to, you can learn from my experience. But what happened to me is that when I started eating a raw diet, which at one time, this is about 50 years ago, there were some people that were talking about eating a diet that was 100% raw. Mm-hmm. Being that I was traditionally trained and I was, you know, 200 pounds, I thought that was ridiculous, because the guy I was speaking to me, he was a very thin guy, but I watched him. He was amazingly strong. He had great endurance. And I'm saying, this guy must have something here. But looking at him visually, it wasn't very appealing to me, because I thought he was too thin. He was thinner than I am, you know? So I kept thinking about it, and I did a little bit of research. There wasn't a lot of information around. There was no computers around. So I decided to, the only way I could find out, I could start, doing the kind of research by reading books. And there was the information that came from Germany by Dr. Ragnar Berg, who was a Nobel Peace Prize in biochemistry. And he had fasted over probably 40,000 people in fasting retreats, and Otto Buchinger, and then Dr. Carl Otto Ali. And they, if you look up the Stockholm Fast March, there were 11 guys that drank water for 10 days and walked 333 miles. So I said, how can anybody do that? Not eat.
We would say the same thing, like, oh.
Well, look it up on, go on the internet. So I said, the only way I could find out how much validity to this is for me to do my own, being I had a clinical background, to do my own experimentation, in which I did. I started right from the beginning. I did all the water fasting. I lived on juices. I did a lot of, it's not truly a fast. I lived on juices for many times over 100 days. Found myself to be fully functional. You know, you'd be surprised what you could really do, because my body was trained from eating a raw type of a diet. Then I had my own television show called Eat Your Way to Health with Dr. Fred Bishy, won a Nova Award. So we used to have a lot of people on it, guys that lifted weights and doctors. We had a lot of healthy discussions, not arguments, and we were going back and forth. And people learned from that. So at that time, at one time, Dick Gregory, I don't know if you ever heard of Dick Gregory, political activist. And he had fasted 57 days on water and walked and ran 100 miles. So people said it was impossible. So it wasn't impossible, because I had done similar things. And while I was in a health food store, and some guy says, I don't believe that. I don't believe it's possible. He said, I'd like to see you do something like that. I said, well, I'm not going to go on a long fast, but I will fast 10 days, and then we can go to Clove Lake Park and see how far I could run. So that's what we did. I fasted for 10 days. They had to believe I did it, but I really did do it. People know that knew me. And we went to Clove Lake Park, and I ran 10 miles through the hills. So you can do unbelievable things, you know what I'm saying? And we're all very unique individuals, and we can only evaluate something on our own experience. Now, when I was lifting weights and going through what I was going, I thought that was insanity. I didn't think anybody could really do that until I start doing it myself. I lost, over a period of about a year, I lost 70 pounds. I went from over 200 pounds. I did a lot of long-term fasting, and then I thought I shot myself in the foot. I thought I was made a tremendous mistake. But then as my body became more biologically efficient, I started to work out again. I started to put on some muscle, and I actually got to the point where I looked reasonably well also. But I found out I was dramatically more healthy. I had unbelievable. One thing is, when you do that type of a diet and you're getting enough carbs, and you're not eating the amount of protein, that's one of the reasons why you're not getting bigger, you have unbelievable endurance. So that's when I did a lot of endurance work, and I kind of made a major mistake. And later on at that time, I believe it was a major mistake for me, I kind of drifted away from resistance training, and I got into the long-distance running, and I ran, you know, two ultramarathons, two 50-mile races, and 18 marathons. But that, and I ran through the prevention marathon, which was below zero. People got, jeez. I had very bad frostbite. But you know what? How I look at that now, I look at that as being temporary insanity. I shouldn't. It was no real, you know, what was to prove. So I learned from all that. And then as the years went on, as working as a clinical nutritionist, I ran into a lot of people from different walks of life with different diseases. Mm-hmm. I worked with one guy that was come in second to Mr. Universe, 280 pounds at 6'5", with
wow.
at least 21-inch arms, enormous, enormous guy. But he ran into severe problems from growth hormone, you know, steroids.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't convince him that he had to really readjust what he was doing through his diet, and he could actually come back. But he tried it, and he lost about 15 pounds, and he said he couldn't afford to lose that much weight because, I mean, this guy would have still looked enormous, you know.
Right. Sounds like what you're describing a lot of is a lot of people will create these mental barriers and assumptions of what they can do, what they can't do.
Yeah, that's true.
And what they have to eat and how big they must be.
Right.
I mean, I'm really fascinated by what you're saying because I myself am eating – I'm not trying to follow any kind of restriction, but I find myself just not wanting a lot of the food I used to. Usually I won't really eat much breakfast until 10 or 11.
Yeah, that's fine. You can do
and
that.
I've started realizing if I don't want food, I won't eat it. And if I want to train light, I will. And I want to go heavy, I will. If I want to run around or swim, I will. And one thing I'm starting to see in my training is I'm getting stronger than I've been in
absolutely
probably the last 3 years, and I'm getting smaller and smaller. You're kind of blowing my mind a little bit with some of this shit.
No,
I'll be honest with you, doctor.
Well, what happens, you're becoming more biologically efficient. So you can actually lose some weight, become more biologically efficient. I mean, there's a certain cutoff point. If you go, you're a big guy.
I'm a beast, yeah.
So if you went down, say you lost 40 pounds, I doubt if you're going to be as strong as you are. You never know, though, because it was hard for people to believe that when I first lost weight and people that knew me, they thought I was out of my mind. They thought something happened to me and I got sick or something like that.
Are you okay? Are you sick, doctor?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know. But I found out you can be very, very strong if you try to follow the same type of diet and you give up the processed food, you're going to become denser. You know, you'll look more ripped. But there's a very good chance you might be a little bit stronger than you are now, because I ran into one guy that followed this type of diet and that was here today, and he said he actually got stronger, but he didn't have the discipline to stay with it. So you have to try for yourself, you know. Don't do anything that's, you know, you're smart guy, you're intelligent guys, you got a great background in doing this. You know, maybe by, you know, cleaning your chemistry up a little bit, you might see a difference, you know.
Technically, I've seen my chemistry up quite a bit. I used to be 100 pounds heavier.
Let's take a break real quick. There's a few things I want to touch on when we get back. I want to talk about raw diet, what detox actually is, and then also I want to talk about your weightlifting experience
okay.
when you were younger. Yeah.
This is Andrea Ager, and you're listening to Barbell Shrug. For the video version, go to barbellshrug.com.
Barbell Shrug is brought to you by you. To learn more about how you can support the show, go to barbellshrug.com and sign up for the newsletter.
And we're back with Dr. Fred Pesci. Pesci?
Pesci.
I want to say Pesci.
Say it right.
We're here with Joe Pesci.
Yeah, Joe Pesci.
It's the accent.
Oh, man.
You started talking about something that was really interesting and talking about people who are outliers, you know, someone who may not exactly take care of themselves, but they still perform at a really high level.
Oh, I knew a number of guys like that. I as I said before, I know one guy, he ended up being a world champ. And I remember when he was a young kid, he was about, let me see if I can remember. He was about 16 years old, and he just caught everybody's attention. Then he joined New York Barbell Club, and I can't remember the exact age and dates, but by the time he was 18, he was the national champ. But he was in his early 20s, he was the world champ. He was the Russians were developing a great weightlifting team. You know, a lot of those guys were into steroids legally. They had these special, they went to special schools. They had special training. They used the most advanced training methods, even more advanced than we were using in this country. But I remember I saw him started to, I was competing in a contest and I was hoping to do pretty well. I certainly wasn't in his category, but he came in and he was, I mean, the guy was, he was legless drunk, you know, so I'm looking at the guy.
And this is weightlifting, like Olympic weight.
Yeah, Olympic weight, press, snatch, and clean and jerk in those days. Yeah. So they made a huge pot of coffee. They poured this coffee into the guy. He comes out, and as I said before, he wiped the floor up with everybody. he won, hands down. But as time goes, it didn't take him long, though, where he got to the point where he was getting injured, developing joint problems, because his lifestyle. And his lifestyle, I mean, he was a good-looking fella. His lifestyle was just over the top, you know what I'm saying? He was so gifted that he squandered his gift on the wrong type of thing. And he made his mark. He was the world's champion. I knew a number of guys that were that way.
That the big risk that if you do push things to chase performance and you think you're getting away with certain things because you feel good and you're lifting good, you're powerful, you got your good endurance, if you're not carefully assessing how you're going about it, you could end up in territory where you can't really get back to healthy. You may go too far, and you realize maybe you've cost yourself too much, and there might be not any going back from that.
Yeah. What happens, a lot of guys develop, you know, joint problems, you know, from some of the bodybuilders from doing wide grips bench presses and bouncing tremendous amounts of weight off their chest. They got all kinds of joint problems. They can't even comb their hair. And a lot of guys who went to powerlifting had developed tremendous injuries, high blood pressure because they were so big, and only God knows what they were really eating. So,
I've heard what some of those guys eat. It's not good.
Well, you used to see me eat.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the sad thing about it, because I still love weightlifting, and I loved it when I was young.
You were a champ, right?
I was a champ, right. And I loved it when I was young, and what made me, I felt bad because I kind of feel like they perverted a wonderful sport. It shouldn't have happened like that, you know? Because there were a lot of dedicated old-timers that were really one of those type of guys. There was another guy that was an Olympic champ, and he was definitely into the steroids, and there was a picture of him on the back of the news, and he was competing in either the World Championship or the Olympics, and he had a clean and jerk over 400 pounds, and he had the weight over his head. He had locked out, and his arm just broke. It snapped. Because of the steroids, he didn't have the skeletal frame to support that kind of weight. He didn't have a much bigger skeletal frame than I did, so the steroids gave him the ability to get the weight up in the air. He couldn't hold it.
It's amazing. The muscular strength.
I trained with a guy.
Right.
Yeah. I trained the powerlifter who left college football. He was, you know, this is a big athletic guy. He wasn't using anything then. But he might have been like a 220-pound linebacker, a small university. He could probably squat 600 and bench press 450. He's a strong guy. But he went into powerlifting, and within maybe a year and a half or 2 years, he was up to over 900 squat. He could pull 800.
Well,
his bench press was 700-something.
He was into the juice, obviously.
Yeah, he got right there to the peak so quick. I was like, this guy's amazing. I did an incline bench press workout with him one time. We were doing dumbbell presses. We had 150-pound dumbbells. I did like five of the most difficult reps I've ever done in my life. I almost blew myself out. He did like 15 or 20 reps with it. And then right about that, he blew out his back. Yeah. It was over because he didn't have the joint integrity to keep doing that, of course.
Listen, doing dumbbell bench press with 150 pounds, you're a real powerful guy.
Incline presses. Incline presses.
That's,
it was almost a military press.
That's awesome. In my day, nobody could do that. There wasn't guys that could do that. That started to happen when they started. And plus, they got more knowledge about, you know, how much protein to eat to make you stronger, you know.
What years did you compete?
1954, I was in the Navy. I was United States Navy heavyweight weightlifting champion. So after I came back from Korea.
What weight was that back then? Because the weight classes have changed over the years.
Well, I was 210 pounds, so that was the heavyweight. Now it's like super heavyweights and things like that. I competed as 175 pound, 198 pound, and as a heavyweight, you know. But my best lifts were pretty close to what yours was: 330 clean and jerk, 275. Because of the way I'm built, I was very quick.
Well, the rules were different, right? The bar couldn't touch your body on the way up.
No, no, you couldn't touch
the bar. See, the rules are different now. Vertical, so for me,
vertical so much pool. Harder.
Yeah, what you were doing was harder than what I was doing, what I do.
Oh, it's different now?
Yeah, because the bar can touch your body on the way up now.
Oh, okay.
So what we do now is we pull the bar off the ground, it makes contact at the hip, and we snap underneath it. So
you're talking about the snatch?
Snatch and clean.
Oh, yeah. In the clean and jerk, you were allowed to bring the bar up to your chest, and then you did another dip, and
it's the same way, but we now hit our thighs and hips.
On the pull.
On the way up.
Oh, okay.
So it's like a two-stage pull, kind
of. So for those of you that don't know, like the bar used to not be able to touch your body until it got to your shoulders.
Oh, exactly.
And for the snatch, it couldn't touch your body at all.
Exactly.
So the lift was completely different, and that was actually one of the reasons you guys did splits instead of... People didn't squat because, you know, do squat snatch and clean, you know, and they didn't squat when they lifted a lot of times just because it wasn't... You know, if you're already having to keep the bar away from your body, the split might be more,
More
efficient.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. You're right. But a guy like me, with my type of build, long legs, short torso, long arms, I was able to do a squat clean, but it was such a unusual position. And being I had a very... My back was strong from doing all those deadlifts.
So you were able to like split snatch like 260.
Yeah, you're built like a deadlifter.
275.
275.
Press split. And 275 snatch and 330 clean and jerk.
And these are all split lifts, not
split
squat
lifts. Yeah. Damn. I couldn't squat. I mean, I could squat, but I'd be leaning way. I can't get up and down where my body's up and down. Mm-hmm. Guys with short legs, longer upper body, are able to squat down and keep their body upright. I can't do it. I was able to squat. And
make sure
I'd
you're
have to
the microphone.
Yeah, you're coming off the mic. There
I would have to catch the bar right here on my delts and catch them right here with my arms, you know?
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
We need to, like, break out some videos. We'll find some Wi-Fi somewhere. We can, like, look at how the lifts used to be and how they are now.
It's changed quite a bit.
We should share videos. That'd be fun.
Do you know Jack LaLanne?
Oh, yeah, I knew Jack LaLanne.
Yeah, was he a buddy of yours? You hang out with him?
Well,
when
I was in California, I worked out in the San Jose Y. He was a class by himself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he could do 120. He only weighed 148 pounds. He could do a seating dumbbell press with 120-pound dumbbells, I think it was.
What?
110, nah, he was...
Sitting there pressing dumbbells straight overhead, military press style?
Together, not alternate, together. He could just sit there and do them. And he could also... he could work out for hours.
Mm-hmm.
Hours. A lot of big guys couldn't keep up with him.
It must have been those shoulder pads in his suit that gave him the strength.
He was a strong guy.
Yeah.
Endurance-wise, he was unbelievable. And I'm sorry to say, he should have never died. He died when he was... 93, 94, he got pneumonia, and somebody that was into hell told him not to take the antibiotics and the pneumonia. He should have took the antibiotics. Yeah. A guy I know in California said, asked me if I would call him. I said, I don't want to just call him. I don't know if the guy wants to hear from me. I said, if I was you, I would tell him to take the antibiotics. Antibiotics are not poison. In a life-threatening situation, you got to take them, or of course you could end up the way he
especially
ended up.
Especially if you're 93.
Yeah, I mean, antibiotics are something that's commonly
over-prescribed,
but there's still a time and place.
The medical world does a really good job of treating short-term acute conditions, like you break your arm or you get pneumonia, you need antibiotics, but chronic conditions is where most people have an issue treating diabetes and heart disease and obesity. Medical world doesn't do a great job of treating those compared to kind of the fitness wellness world. It's a long-term problem that needs a long-term solution, but a short-term problem, like a car accident, needs a short-term solution.
Absolutely.
You got to go in there and fix the arm, like right now.
Well, my personal belief, I work with a lot of doctors. I have doctors that are friends of mine. I believe they should be, where they should be really utilized is emergency medicine, surgery, and chronic disease, you know, should be left. I mean, I work with a lot of people who have chronic disease, and it's not really hard to deal with chronic disease if you understand lifestyle change and how to manipulate a person's chemistry and take their body to clean it up so it's not a good host for bacteria proliferation. I agree with you completely.
You were talking earlier about detox. Could you describe to us what happens during a detox? A lot of professionals, a lot of health professionals throw the word detox around, and sometimes I'm wondering, I don't even know what they mean.
Right, so. Exactly. Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I think detox is the most poorly understood aspect of a person becoming healthy, especially in the natural field. Mm. Now, when I talk about detox, I think the first depends upon what the situation is. If you have a serious chronic disease or an acute disease, and you, in order to have a chance of your body overcoming it, either with the help of a physician or without a physician, the best way to detox is like these. Let's start from a basic understanding of what a detox is. If you're smoking crack or snorting cocaine, what's the best way to detox?
Stop doing that.
Stop doing it.
I was like, I'm trying to draw on my experience of cocaine use.
Of course, stop doing it. And your body your body is detoxing 24 hours a day. Once you stop detoxing, your lymph system, your body chemistry is going to be overwhelmed and you're going to get sick if your body stops. So when you fall behind from your lifestyle, whatever you're doing that's wrong, what you have to do is to, either clean up your diet, and then there's things you could do to, you can go into fasting, you know, like I had an extensive background in water fasting, so if you're not eating anything and you're just resting and you're drinking water, your body, within 3 days, your body goes into a detox. In other words, it starts to feed off the, whatever in your bowels, it starts to feed off weak and dying cells, the aging cells.
Yeah.
Then it'll go to like maybe cysts, tumors, and even rents, and it'll start to feed off that. So your body knows how to detoxify itself. You don't have to take some potent drink, and sometimes you can do things like that.
You just sold me. I've never heard anyone describe it that
way. Or you can go on a juice fast. If you go on a juice fast, is very common now. I'm a consultant for a big juice, bunch of juice bars in Manhattan, and everybody's doing like a, to do a, guys like you could do a 30-day juice fast like it was, would be nothing.
I don't think so. I would be grumpy as hell, I think.
but the reason for that is because you'd be detoxing. After 3 or 4 days, for instance, I have a daughter. My daughter's you'd be surprised what you could really do.
Yeah.
So I'm wanting to try it now. I'm like, man, when can I do this?
Well, why don't you try it?
He's going to set a deadline for me.
Are you challenging him, doctor? No, I want you to challenge him.
No. The first, I'm telling you right now, the first 24 hours, you're going to be a grump, okay? And you're going to be irritable and everything. Then, once you get past the third day, you're going to start and drink 6, 7, 8 juices a day. Don't worry about the protein. Just drink the juices, because your body's going to, through the process of autolysis, you're going to be, the weight you lose is going to be recycled as fat and protein. That's, you have to look up Dr. Ragnar Berg. He's the most brilliant guy.
So am I going to be super lean at the end of this?
No, at 7 days?
No, after 30 days.
Well,
I'm trying to time this for the beach.
Well, how much? In 30 days, you probably would lose, if you drank 9 juices a day. You're not going to, if you're drinking juices, you're not going to have to go to bed. You're going to have tremendous amount of energy. You're going to be shocked after about the fifth day, your energy is going to start going through the roof. So if
you want to try this, Michael?
I'm trying to think about what day I could do this.
In about 30 days. Well, why don't you just try a 3-day juice fast the first time? You're going to be grumpy the whole 3 days, though, based on what you told me.
my wife is not liking hearing this.
No.
Interesting is the detox word. When anybody says detox, we all go to like, it's a taboo word. It's a gimmicky word. You think, you're going to push me on some product. But really, isn't it? If we think about what's, quote-unquote, I'm using my quotation fingers, what's most natural in the vast span of our physiology as a species, there's going to be times where we would catch something, we'd have bounty, there's times when we're going to catch shit, and we're going to have to work that whole time for a long stretch with very little, if a little bit of water, but maybe nothing else, for maybe a month. Would you say our physiology is sort of programmed, coded to be triggered by these situations and go into a different gear?
Absolutely.
To me, that is very intuitive.
Listen. Your body knows how to do this intuitively. You're 100% right. There's no mystery to this. You don't even have to have a clue to what you're doing. Your body knows intuitively, in its chemistry, how to keep you healthy and restore your health. We have to get out of its way. The whole problem is to stop doing what we're doing. We're intoxicating ourselves so much today from the standard American diet. That's why more and more people are getting cancer. Type 2 diabetes is out of control. Arthritis is out of control, and it has a lot to do with our lifestyle. I hear people, if you go on the internet, There's so much confusion about what kind of diet people should be following. You know, you hear people talk about the raw food diet now. There's a macrobiotic diet, the paleo diet, you name it. There's a coconut diet, whatever diet you can think about.
These wackos.
Yeah, but the common denominator in all these diets is to leave out the processed food.
Yeah.
I hear a lot of people that they kind of malign the paleo diet. It's not that bad a diet at all because they're eating, first of all, there is no paleo diet. Paleolithic era was between 10 million years ago and maybe a million years ago. So if you lived up in Alaska, the paleo diet couldn't be the same as what you're eating in Central America or Costa Rica. Up in Alaska, they're probably eating a lot of moose, a lot of bear. They're able to eat some root vegetables. But were they healthy? Yeah, they were healthy because they weren't eating any processed food. They didn't have cell phones. They weren't drinking all that booze and all the stuff that and smoking cigars, you know. Cuban cigars, like,
or just go a little bit more to the extreme of that environment, and the whole diet of that culture would be fat, seal fat,
well,
a little bit of meat, but they would also be healthy. But again, it's the absence of the other
things. Well, healthy fats are not, listen, a lot of people are going to get mad at me for saying this. Healthy fats are not the worst thing in the world.
Well, we're at least on this page.
We're saying that's a good thing.
That's one thing that people are accepting now is true, is that at least we're getting people to eat butter again, doctor. Good high quality butter.
Well, try to give them the raw butter with what's called
Absolutely, Factor X,
you know. Yeah. But the Price Partner Foundation is very heavy into people eating, you know, plenty of animal protein that's pristine, though, because of what Dr. Partner just said. But, you see, I can take people way beyond that. But I try to meet people where they're at. I know where you guys are coming from. And if you ask me to help you, I could tell you, I know you're not going to, you know, get into anything radical. I know you don't want to get as thin as I am, but you could be supremely healthy and maintain the same type of bills that you have now by eating clean food. You know, if you're eating beef, you got to eat grass-fed beef. Mm-hmm. If you, because it's got all the hormones, the pesticides, the chemicals, plus the urea. Whenever you're eating, you know what urea is. You know what it's, you know what's going on. So you got to try to eat as clean as you possibly can, no matter what you're eating. When I was in Australia, we were talking to some Aborigines. They lived on grubs and...
Which is probably, very good for you.
Yeah, it was much better than eating cold cuts from the local deli in downtown Manhattan.
Cheaper.
No doubt about that.
Sure.
So even though you're kind of a raw foods guy now, when you consult with athletes, MMA fighters, or CrossFit athletes, you don't push just raw foods on them necessarily.
Absolutely not.
It depends on what they want.
I tell them, here's what I tell them. Mm-hmm. If you think you got cancer, and a doc tells you got cancer, or you got some serious, you know, like MS or something real serious, they're not going to try to get them to come in this direction because you really can help people. Mm-hmm. It's radical. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but it's very, very therapeutic. It's definitely the ultimate form of detox while you're eating food. Mm-hmm. And your body detoxes naturally. So, and of course, there's things that you could do. You know, you could get into an infrared sauna. You can use a hyperbaric chamber. Guys that work out should be able to avail themselves to a low-pressure hyperbaric chamber because it's absolutely amazing. So
never done that. Yeah. You don't know anything about that?
No, I've got a couple of friends that have played around with it, but I personally have not.
I've never used it.
Well, a lot of professional athletes have low-pressure hyperbaric chambers in their house.
I hear about it for, you know, train low or sleep, like in a hyperbaric chamber where the pressure's lower so you can hopefully bump up your red blood cell count. So when you're running, you have more ability to transfer oxygen and whatnot for endurance sports, but... You're referring to that for
recovery,
for health.
You're talking about the opposite. You're talking about
the
pumping in. Yeah, you're talking about
your
increasing
oxygen
the
oxygen. You're in there with oxygen under pressure.
Yeah.
It helps you. I used to work with guys that one guy in particular was a international Ironman triathlete star and used the hyperbaric chamber on him for recovery, and he recovered in almost 2 days rather than taking a week or two.
Yeah, a lot of pro football teams will have a couple hyperbaric chambers.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and they'll throw the guy, especially if they have injuries. They throw them in there, and the injuries happen real fast.
Oh.
It's just increased partial pressure of oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
And,
very rapid recovery. There was a guy that played football, I think it was for Philadelphia, and he broke his ankle, and 6 weeks before the Super Bowl, you remember his name, Rory? Yeah. So what happened, they said he could never play in the Super Bowl. But he went out and bought, somebody got him a low-pressure hyperbaric chamber. He healed, and he played in the Super Bowl, and he played well. So it's there's so much to all this, you know.
Let's get our juice, Mike.
It kind of goes both ways, yeah.
Let's drink some juice and get in the chamber. What do you say?
Yeah, absolutely. Have you ever heard of CrossFit?
Oh, yeah.
Did you pay much attention to it?
Yeah, I don't know that much about it, but I've certainly heard of it.
What are your general thoughts about it? Since, I mean, that we have a lot of CrossFitters that watch this show. So you might want to watch
You're talking about CrossFit training, right?
Yeah, CrossFit training.
Sure. Diversifying your exercises.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm all for it 100%. Yeah. I mean, I did. I used to ride a bike, and I used to run and do a lot of stretching. Yeah, the more diversified your exercise, you're going to create better balance, less chance of injuries, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, variety is generally a good thing.
Oh, absolutely.
So you eat a raw diet. What exactly does that mean? I mean, I know some people are raw vegan. I know some people are raw as in like I've heard of people going just eating raw beef. And
yeah, there's a guy in California advocates people eat raw meat. That's not for me. It's not necessary. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. My diet consists of fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, juices, smoothies, and some of it is actually delicious. People don't realize I'm a consultant for a juice bar in Manhattan called Juice Press. If you ever went in there and ate the food, you could sit down and eat a cheesecake, and it's really, it's actually
twist my arm, doctor.
So it's really good.
It's called Juice Press?
Juice Press, yeah. There's like 20-something stores in Manhattan.
So you don't eat any meat?
No, I don't eat meat.
How long have you not had meat for?
About 50 years. I haven't eaten any cooked food at all. Zero in 50 years. My life.
Holy shit. Yeah.
Do you have like a cheat every once in a while? Like,
Never. I can't. See, that's what people don't realize. You can't, because if I ate something that I'm normally not eating, I would feel like, if I ate a piece of meat, you know, you'd about an hour or two, you'd probably have to call an ambulance because my body has stopped.
You just don't produce the enzymes necessary to digest that.
I have no desire to eat. Although when I was young, I used to love to eat a steak or something like that.
So logistically, do you bring most of your food with you when you travel? Or when you go to a restaurant, do you just order off the menu and just tell them what to bring you? How does that work? Or you just go to the grocery store and just buy some stuff and call it good? Because you don't have to cook it.
No, what I do, when we travel, Rory and I, Dr. Rory Dean, it works for me, we usually bring our own food. We have a cooler, we bring our own food. And unless I'm coming to a place, a lot of places I go to speaking up, that's what they're feeding people. So I really don't have, trouble eating, because if it's not available, I don't eat. I'll go someplace and buy it. If I have to, I'll go buy something that's not organic. I'll go to a supermarket. But we always manage. It's not a big problem. And believe it or not, as bizarre as it sounds, some of the way the food is prepared and some of the type of dishes that we eat, it really is delicious. It's like eating dessert all the time. Mm-hmm. But you have to be used to it. You have to have that mindset to do it. And plus, with me now, it's a question of survival. Here I am at 85. If I start eating some of this other stuff, I won't be around very long, you know, to be perfectly honest with you. So I feel wonderful at this point in my life. I feel as good as I did when I was in my 50s. Mm-hmm. And I survived a very serious near-death situation about a year and a half ago, and not too many people thought I was going to survive or bounce back. I'm ready to go.
Hell yeah.
I bounced back.
Care to share what that event was?
What?
Do you care to share what that event was?
No, I have no problem. What happened is I had never been sick. You know, I don't remember being sick, and I had some dental work done. I didn't realize I have a very small throat, you know? Mm-hmm. So what happened, I wasn't masticating my food as well as I should, and some food got into my airway and it went down into my lung. The airway is in front, your esophagus is right behind it, right? And there's a sphincter here called the glottis, and when you chew your food, your tongue goes into your roof of your mouth. It's an automatic reflex, and it just pushes it over the glottis, and the epiglottis slides over and closes it.
Right.
It wasn't working for me. It went in there. Right.
Oh,
and I was gulping the food down. I wasn't chewing it down. It went into my lungs, and I started to cough, and the cough got more and more violent as time went on. Finally, I said, something radically wrong, I knew. So I went to a local doctor who was, he wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer, I come to realize.
It's a bad sign when your life's on the line.
So he said I had athletically induced asthma. I said, listen, doctor, I don't have asthma. I think I have pneumonia here, you know. So he says, no, you don't have it. I don't know how they made that mistake. They gave me an x-ray, and I went home. I got sicker. then a guy, a friend of mine, wanted me to go see a doctor in the city. I went seeing a doctor, and as soon as he looked at me, he said, I want you to go see a pulmonologist at Mount Sinai Hospital with a woman. I went to see her. She gave me an x-ray, and she says, you have to go into a hospital immediately. I says, can't you give me, because I never was in a hospital, can't you give me antibiotics and I'll go home? She says, no, you can't do that. So I went into the hospital, and what happened is that they started to treat me. They gave me antibiotics, which I never had, which ended up making me real sick. My legs swelled up. I had all kinds of problems. And they sent me home. And when I went home, I got progressively worse because I was trying to eat some food. And every time I put food in my mouth, I would go like this to cough, and the food was going into my airway.
Wow.
So then I got to the point where I knew I was dying. So I told my wife, I said, I got to go back into the hospital. Well, my whole family was shocked because they know I wouldn't do that unless something was radically wrong. Right. So I went back into the hospital. They put me in the critical care unit. The first day I was in there, the guy next to me died. They were coming in, they were looking at me, and I know the way they were looking at me wasn't really that good.
Like the crows were circling.
Huh?
The crows were trying to circle you.
Yeah, right. So what happened, well, I ran into one doctor, and he come in, he said, can I talk to you? I want to come in. I have to come in the early in the morning, about 4 o'clock. I said, okay, I'll be wakey. Come in. And he says, you know, I have a feeling you have aspirational pneumonia. Bingo. As soon as he said that, I knew he was right. I knew exactly that the guy was right. So what they did is, in order to take that test, they said, they made me wait 7 days. I didn't eat, I had no food, and they wouldn't let me drink water, chew ice, which was kind of ridiculous. And I couldn't even get into any intravenous fluids, of course, my legs had swollen up. So I did that. I think that's called the dry fast. There's a lot of Russian people, you know, I've done some dry fasting. I thought they knew what they were doing. They would just make me, they didn't have a time slot to put me in, and they didn't want me to eat in between. Why, I don't really know. So what happened is that that's what I had. I had aspirational pneumonia. They put me on massive amounts of intravenous antibiotics, which really took its toll on me. Yeah. And I went home, and I recovered from the pneumonia quickly, but what was done, you know, I did a bronchoscopy, and they gave me general anesthesia, which did affect my short-term memory and had some real issues. So
survived, man.
I survived, yeah. I was really lucky. But that's the only time I've ever really been sick, and I bounced back. I feel good. I'm back into working out again and everything, you know.
Well, sounds like how do you work out these days? You're back into working out?
Yes, I'm back into working out. What I do is I do Qigong. I do, and like Rory does it too. He's much better at it than I do. Mm-hmm. I am. So
that was the martial art you talked about earlier.
Martial arts, right. Mm-hmm. So I get up in the morning. I do sit-ups. I do all kinds. And I have some light dumbbells that I work out with. I do my Qigong. And then I live in an area in Staten Island. There's a lot of pits and a lot of hills up there. So what I eat, some days I run. I do repeats, like up the hills, you know, run back and forth.
You run hill sprints in the morning?
Pardon me?
You run hill sprints?
Not every day. Some days I walk. It depends upon how I feel. I'm getting stronger now. So I keep telling Rory I plan on getting back to some heavy running. But
this is amazing attitude, man.
That's badass, by the way. I want to run a hill sprint at 85. That's awesome.
I could still sprint, though. I could still run, you know. You know what affected me the most being in a hospital, though? My equilibrium is off.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so it's coming back, but I don't know what.
So balance is a little tough.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's harder for me to come down a staircase than to go up it. You know, because when I go down, but it's getting better. So if that gets better, I'm going to get into a lot more stuff, you know,
not to be a lesson to everybody. He just said, I'm 85, I'm looking forward to getting stronger.
This is incredible. Yeah, anyone who wants to knock anything about, like, raw diet or anything, I mean, you've been doing it for a long time.
Nah, you can't knock it. People that knock it haven't experienced it. I'm more than willing to say it's not for everybody. In fact, it might be for just people that are really, you know, striving for the highest ideals in everything. And that's my philosophy is not to settle for mediocrity in anything I do. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the reasons.
Man, this guy's so amazing.
That's one of the reasons I got into eating a raw food diet. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, as I told you before, I thought I shot myself in the foot. But now, am I glad I did it? Yes, I believe that somebody that knows how to do an all raw diet, that gets into it, I believe you have a very good chance of living 100 or beyond. Mm-hmm. That's what I always kid. I always tell people I'm kind of living in the death zone now because this is where a lot of people die, you know? So mm-hmm. I want to see what a lot of people are waiting, and I'm waiting to see what's going to happen to me. But what I'm really doing is I tell my grandson, what I'm doing is I'm planning for the next 30 years. I want to watch him grow up more. So
yeah.
I'm kidding, of course, but whatever happens.
Why not?
Yeah.
I don't put anything past you, sir.
Yeah.
I think you could definitely right. make
it. Listen, I have an attitude of gratitude. After what happened to me, that was kind of a humbling experience because I wouldn't say I was cocky. I'm not that type of a person. But I always figured, listen, I'm not going to get sick. Well, when that happened to me, and when I went through that experience, mm-hmm. and when I was laying in that bed, I said to myself, oh, boy, this is going to be a close call. But, you know, mm-hmm. I got a lot of faith in God, and mm-hmm. I hung right in there. I wasn't scared.
You know, a lot of people, yeah. sir, would have not had this mindset and would have not made it out of that bed. Most of people would not have made it out of that bed.
Well,
probably just because they probably would see the writing on the wall, they'd probably give up.
I don't give up. I'm not the type of guy to give up.
Well,
no, I everything I do, I don't give. I just don't. It's not my nature. I ran through a marathon once. It was 10 below zero without the wind chill factor. Got severe frostbite. And the state trooper combined says, hey, listen, you better get in the car. He says, nobody's on the road anymore. So I said, how far is the finish line? He said, about 4 miles. I said, I'm going to make it. And I made it. I could have given up. My ear had very bad frostbite. It was leaking. It was stuffed my nose. It was all black here. I had a bullseye around my nose. And when I went home, my wife says, is that you? What happened to you? You know,
wow.
So, I'm not going to give up.
every time I come up to Vermont and hang out with Joe DeSena's friends, I feel like a pussy. Oh, that's amazing. Do you have a book you want to promote?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, my book here, Eat Your Way, Your Healthy Journey.
Can we have a copy of this book, sir? Because I'm reading this shit on the
yep.
way.
Okay, that's for you. That's for you.
Thank you.
Your Healthy
Journey. Hard to say no when you ask them in front of everyone on the show.
No, I wouldn't say no. Your Healthy Journey, you read that book. You guys should read that book.
Yeah.
You can create your own diet. Mm-hmm. You can create your own diet and keep doing what you're doing and maintain the same size, the same amount of strength, and little by little, kind of prepare yourself for later on in life. Don't forget, you're all young guys now.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was, I don't know how old you are. How old are you?
31.
31. 34. Okay, 34. You're all young. How old are you?
32.
32. Okay, listen, to be honest with you, there's an arrogance in youth. When I was young, I thought I was indestructible.
Mm-hmm.
But as you grow older, you realize, you know, and you see people die. I've seen people die. Mm-hmm. You realize we are not indestructible. So the key is you want to make yourself so you give yourself your best chance to live, have a long life, but not so much to live a long life, to have a long life with quality. To not be, I know guys that are younger than I am are walking with walkers. That's not for me. So the key is to prepare yourself by cleaning up your diet as much as you possibly can and still, you know, avoid the processed food if you can. And everything else could be the same, just clean.
Mm-hmm.
Try to eat grass-fed beef. Try not to eat, you know, mm-hmm. whatever you're eating, and you'll see. And even as good as if you do it, you leave out all the processed food, you'll go into a detox. Trust me, you really will.
That's awesome.
I think you've won some sharing that with us.
This has been fantastic.
Can I ask one more question? This
sure.
Man? For all the people who will listen to this, and they have aspirations to get strong, like we talked about, the limits they should put, be smart about it. For people who want to get strong, they're going to do it the right way. What's your best advice for somebody who's getting the CrossFit? Maybe they're early 20s. Maybe they're going to try to compete in weightlifting, but their mindset may be a little raw and new, and they might not know how about going about it. What is the mindset, in your view, to be as strong as possible in the best possible way? You know?
Well, is to, I would say to, and to be as healthy as you possibly can too. Okay, is to clean up your diet, right? Make sure, don't be afraid of eating fruits and vegetables. Whatever the amount of protein, the animal protein, or whatever source of protein, you can get plenty of good plant proteins that'll promote growth too. Try to make it about 10% more than you need to maintain your body weight. Remember, protein and fat is not as good a source of fuel as carbohydrates. So when you're eating just basically protein, that's why years ago people just ate protein and drank water. They got so ripped, but some of them would pass out. Guys actually passed out.
Mm-hmm.
I remember once a guy, I won't tell you who it was because he's still alive. he actually passed out on that type of a diet just to get ripped. They were preparing for bodybuilding contests. So what I would recommend for a guy like that is to clean up your diet, eat the amount of protein, whether from a vegan source or an animal source, to just maybe 10% more, so you're gaining muscle. You're not going to have an excess of protein, and somebody's going to be converted to body fat. You don't want to do that either. So clean up your diet, eat fruits, vegetables, animal proteins. You don't even need the grains, you know.
So we just stick to heavy barbells and forget all the silliness? Go get a thick barbell with lead shot in the ends, or dig a hole in our backyard and quit fucking around
with
these gyms, doctor?
I don't think you're going to see those kind of... I trained in a gym that they didn't even have an Olympic barbell set. This was many years ago, and they had all the barbells were like giant kettlebells. They had very thick handles. They didn't have a ball bearing swivel on it. You had to turn it. You have to have a grip of like a vice grip to actually turn it over, and you would load the bells at the end of the barbell and the kettlebells. You had to load them. But they had buckshot. They had a big thing of buckshot and sand. You load it, and you know you did your exercise.
Nothing fancy is required, folks. If you're worried about what equipment you have or what you're lacking, and you're using that as an excuse to be weak or to have results you're not happy with, you're kind of lying to yourself, huh?
Yeah, I remember guys that did chins and dips and push-ups had fabulous business. You know, you do a lot of wide grip chins, underhand, overhand chins, do high repetition push-ups, do jump and squats, parallel bar dips, you're going to have a fabulous body.
We love you.
Yeah.
We're our new favorite friend, gymnast.
And you'll be strong. There was a guy named Marvin Eden. He used to do parallel bar dips with 300 pounds strapped to his waist.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
He's kind of strong.
I used to strap weights and do dips to my waist. I used to love to do all that type of stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The only problem is you could damage your front deltoids. You went too far. You went down. You shouldn't really go down. Your upper arms were below parallel. A lot of guys used to go all the way down to get a stretch for their pecs. They weren't stretching their pecs. They were tearing their front deltoid muscles. Mm. But there was a lot of guys that were... from what I hear from the younger guys like yourself today, there's guys out there, I never heard of anybody doing bench press with 600-700 pounds. There was nobody could do that in those days. Mm-hmm. I remember the world's record was held by a guy by the name of Bob McCune. Don't ask me what year, I don't remember. But it was about 400 pounds, that was the world's record. So mm-hmm. today, a lot of college guys are doing that. Repetitions in the gym, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, we only know it's possible because guys like you and older lifters paved the way, and just like the 4-minute mile with Roger Bannister, they made it a thing you could achieve. Like, this guy's doing that. I could do that. He's nothing special. I could bench more than this guy. And that goes the same in a clean and jerk and a snatch. It just started escalating. I think as long as we keep that mindset to push our limits, but we don't do anything that we know is going to be excessive and compromise our health, I think we've got a good strategy.
Well, a lot of barriers, I think, are mental, you know. I think a lot of it is mind. Somebody tells you, listen, nobody in the world could lift a 400 pound. Can't be done? I think mentally, when you start to get, you're doing something, you're approaching 400 pounds, I think you're not bringing all the quick twitch muscles into play because you know, subconsciously or unconsciously, you're trained to think that you're reaching a barrier that you can't suppress. Yeah. So if you're not bringing enough quick twitch muscles into play, you're not going to be that strong. Mm-hmm. People just don't realize that. And that's why I remember...
You remind me of John Wellborn's quote.
Well, you know, I remember when I was lifting, you're not going to laugh. A lot of guys used to do a lot of breathing, you know. Mm-hmm. And when I used to get over that bar and I was getting ready to do a snatch or a clean and jerk or anything I was doing, I would do a lot of breathing. Mm-hmm. And I knew people say, what good is that? They thought it was a show. What you're really doing when you do that, you're actually going into the fight or flight response. Response. You're pumping out adrenaline. So if you do it enough, you're going to be that much stronger because you're going to be secreting adrenaline. You're in a fight or flight response. When you're in a fight or flight response, you can be unbelievably strong.
Yeah.
And breathing, same thing in the martial arts. When you know how to breathe, you'll be surprised if you're breathing correctly and you have the energy, the power you can have, even a thin guy can have immense power.
Doug, you won't let him punch you in the stomach. Let him punch you in the stomach.
The opening of the show.
So make sure to check out Your Healthy Journey. That's a book you wrote.
Yes.
And do you have a website that people should check out?
What's the website?
Leave it out.
Any doubt, leave it out.
And you can buy the book on any.leaveitout.com.
Yeah, yep.
Check it out, folks.
We'll make sure to share all this.
Make sure you head over to barbellshrug.com, sign for the newsletter, and we'll notify you anytime we post these things.
Okay. Sir, it was an honor. Yeah. Thank you very
Thanks
much.
For
yeah, it was
us.
A lot of fun. I enjoyed myself. It brings back a lot of memories. Thanks for having me on.
We're going to come see him, man. Do this again.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to come and train with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You bet. Thanks, Fred.